Y'all, if you are a queer parent, and I have a feeling you might be, and you're dreaming of the ultimate family getaway, you have to check this out, y'all. Gays with Kids is hosting their fifth annual LGBTQIA+ Family Spring Break from April 2nd through April 6th, 2026. Mark that on your calendars. It is going to be the perfect mix of fun, community, and a beautiful chance to build real connections with other LGBTQIA families, like mine, because we're going to be there. We're going to be there too, and I want to see you there. This is it going to be 3 nights aboard Royal Caribbean International, cruising through the Bahamas, surrounded by other amazing queer families. If this sounds like your kind of trip, because it does for me, you're going to head to the link in the show notes to grab your spot. Oh, and don't forget to mention that you heard about it from the Queer Family Podcast. And come say hi to me when you're there. Okay, I hope to see you there. Let's get on with this show. Somebody's throwing a party. Guess what? I'm throwing another party, y'all, and this one is happening on Halloween. So you bring your costumes, you bring your kids, you bring your joy, and we are going to meet at Sugar Mouse in NYC. That's on the Lower East Side from 4 to 6 p.m. on Saturday, October 25th. That is the Saturday before Halloween, and it's also after your children's nap time, so everyone can come. There will be games. There might be a little costume party catwalk. There are drinks for the adults, of course. And I will be there with my family. So I hope you all show up. The info's in the show notes. And click the link to RSVP. And I'll see you there. Let's go. Let's have a little fun. We deserve it. We really do. This episode and the entire year of episodes is proudly brought to you by California Cryobank. Use code QUEERFAM25 for a free level 2 subscription to their donor catalog.
The Queer Family Podcast. Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love.
It was very challenging from the outs in the outside world because we didn't tell the world our circumstance. Like, we pretended to be a straight family, and my dad's partner, yes, and my dad's partner was the roommate. And we did that from 5 to 14 because they were truly in fear of their lives.
Oh, wow. Like Three's Company with kids.
Yes, yes, yes. And so it was like that piece was like so challenging because we weren't allowed to talk about our family.
Welcome, 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 y'all, to the Queer Family Podcast, the show all about family, but with gay. I'm Jamie. I'm your gay host. And this is the show that highlights, celebrates, uplifts, and normalizes LGBTQIA families in all of our fabulous identities. And the interview I'm sharing with you today is with a fabulous person with a fabulous identity indeed. I got to sit down with Anne Russo. Now, Anne is many things, but Anne happens to be the child of queer parents. And now you know I always lean in a little closer when I'm talking to a child of queer parents because I think there's still some part of me deep down that wants to make sure we're doing it all right. We're not ruining these kiddos because of our gayness, which I know we're not. I know we're not, but I always lean in a little closer just to hear about how the experience was and just to make sure the experience was as beautiful as I think it is being for my children and for the countless of other parents of children I talk to. And I'll tell you what, Anne didn't disappoint on that. Anne did have a wonderful experience with her gay parents, and you're going to hear all about it from Anne in Anne's own words. But it's a lovely, lovely testament to the intentionality and beauty of our families. Anne also happens to be a therapist who specializes in religious trauma, which I'm sure many of you who are listening, if you are in the LGBTQIA community, know a little bit about. And so we go into that a bit as well, and how Anne's experiences in life have informed who Anne has become today. And then a little note before I roll the tape, because we also talk a little bit about something that had recently happened right after we had spoken. We recorded this interview the day after the Annunciation Catholic Church shooting in Minneapolis. And so I kind of surprised Anne with a question for how do folks deal with this kind of trauma that seems to keep happening. And so we have a discussion on gun violence and how we can all stay safe and mentally healthy during tragedies like this, and how we all can keep on keeping on, so to speak. And of course, now, since that happened, Charlie Kirk was assassinated at an event in Utah. The fallout from Charlie Kirk's death and also the Annunciation Catholic shooter has, of course, supercharged anti-trans talking points and people talking about the trans agenda, and they want to take away gun rights from just trans people, not cis white men like they should. But yay, don't get me started there. But this episode with Anne is just a reminder about how we, our LGBTQIA community, are real people who build beautiful families and pass down empathy, not hate. We pass down empathy, not hate. And our community is more than a headline. We are parents, we are kids, we are chosen family, and we are doing everything with love. We are. We are leading with love. At least I am, and I know you are too. So keep on keeping on with that. Take a breath and listen. Anne's story, I think this episode is kind of the antidote to the noise. And I hope y'all are keeping safe inside your heads and minds and hearts as well as you can do in these crazy, crazy, crazy times. I love y'all. And I hope you enjoy this here little episode. Let's roll that tape, Helen and Beulah. Thank you so much.
Queer Family Podcast, love is love.
Hi, Anne.
Hi, Jamie. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Good, good. Thank you.
It's nice to meet you.
It's really nice to meet you, too.
Yep. And I'm really excited to get to know you and get to know your story. So let's just, without further ado, so the listeners know who we're talking to and what story, what kind of a story we're going to hear today. Let's start your 30-second elevator pitch. On your mark, get set, go.
Hello, I am Anne Russo. I'm a licensed clinical social worker, and I run a practice called AMR Therapy that works with diverse clients, especially queer clients. I am also a religious trauma therapist, and I'm currently writing a book on religious trauma and the intersection of queerness and spirituality, which I think is a really important topic. I was born in New York, and I was raised by my two dads and my mom all in one household in the 1980s. So that, I feel, gives me a very unique perspective on the world and what it means to be part of a queer family. And I really love meeting people and experiencing life and traveling and cultures and just learning from other people, because I feel like we are our best selves when we learn from other people. And that is my elevator pitch.
Okay. Love it. I mean, you did go over, Anne, you did, but I won't fault you for it, because honestly, most folks go over, and that's how we do here. But I'm excited to talk to you because you are what they lovingly refer to as queer spawn. Have you heard that term?
I haven't, but I'm into it.
Oh, really?
It. Queer spawn. Yeah, yeah. And I am.
You know what's really funny? I've been hearing that term ever since I had kids as a gay woman.
Yeah.
And I never have been like a fan of it. It sounds like weird, like mold or something to me. But
I envisioned a little alien coming out of an egg when you
right,
said
it's
that.
Like, but it's like, interesting. Right. It's yeah. Interesting. But it is kind of this like universal term now. And many children of queer folks actually identify as queer spawn, like they've taken on the identity. So, like, you know, to each their own, and I don't fault the name, it's not my fault, but I just met the person who is the spouse of the person who created the term, which was just like this weird full circle moment. Yeah.
Wow.
And this person is involved with collage. Are you interested? Are you?
I have heard collage? Of it, yes.
Collage is like a group for, I'm going to butcher it, and I'll put something in the show notes that explains what it is. But it's like for queer spawn to kind of create community together and give advice and things like that. So anyway, I always lean in a little closer when I talk to a child of queer folks.
Sure.
Because I want to make sure I'm not screwing my kids up. At least not for the gay reason.
I'm sure not. Yeah.
But can we talk about your family growing up a little? I'd love to hear your story. I want to hear everything about what it was like. So, you know, you take me wherever you want to.
Awesome. Yeah. You know, and it's funny, you know, you say like, oh my gosh, is the gay stuff like an issue? And I think, you know, in the 1980s, it was such an issue and I don't feel like it screwed me or my sister up. So I just want to put that out there.
Okay.
I feel
okay.
like it actually helped us in many ways, because while there were challenges, and, you know, and I'll get into it, I feel like it gave us a unique perspective on the world and relationships, because we were always taught to love and accept everybody really as individuals. So we didn't really have it in our mind to like, this person shouldn't have kids or this person shouldn't exist, you know? So I feel privileged to have that. But I'll start from the beginning, because yes. The beginning is pretty wild. So Please. My dad and my mom, you know, got married in like 1979, and I came out in the early 80s, 81, my sister, 83. When I was about 4 years old, my dad came to the conclusion that he was a gay male. Now, back then in a small town, you know, if you're having certain feelings, no one had words for what those feelings were or understood it. And if they did, it was very negative and you just smash it down, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So he couldn't smash it down anymore. You know, mm-hmm. And he went to my mom and explained it. And from what my mom says, and I really admire this about my mom, she said, well, you know, if that's who you are, that's who you are. Like, seek support, seek, like, figure this out. Like, and not in a negative way, like in a loving way, you know, not like, you better figure this out, you know?
Yeah.
Like, and so like, it was it in time, you know, he was embraced that, and he met his partner in 1985, who is still his partner today.
Wow. Way mm-hmm. to go.
Yeah.
Wow.
They celebrated 40 years a few months ago.
That's awesome. So he came into your life when you were like five.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. So he's my dad as much as my, like, they're both my dads. Like, I don't.
Equally.
Yeah. And they always have been. You know, I would even, when I was younger, I would say like, I can't even differentiate the emotional bond or connection between the two of them. Like, there's not one that's stronger, because it's it just doesn't exist in me, you know?
I love hearing that so much. And like, I can't even handle how much I love to hear that, just because, you know, in so many of our families, even when we do it from scratch as a queer couple, right? So we don't get to baby dance to do it, so to speak.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even, you know, so my wife and I each gave birth to one. So I'm non-bio mom to one of my kids and bio mom, you know what I mean? So, and her same vice versa. And that's a recurring theme that comes up for queer parents. Like, oh my God, are they going to bond more with, you know, how much does genetics matter? And that is like, oh, I love it. Thank you.
Yeah. Because I know that it does, because I talk to my clients, you know, about those fears, you know, and they get it. And, you know, I can tell you, like, standing here, like, that just doesn't even exist.
Wow.
At all. You know?
Yeah. You just warmed so many people's hearts with that statement and that line.
Awesome.
I believe. So, okay. So your dad meets your other dad. And what happened with your mom? Like, it sounds like everything was simpatico and beautiful, but like, how, tell me.
I mean, of course, you know, there are many, many challenges of navigating and figuring out, and what does this mean? And just, you know, and I was very young, so I really didn't understand, obviously, all the complications. But what I do know is that after a few months, my mom, my dad and his partner and my sister and I, we actually moved across the country, because it was very difficult to be a queer family. Like, there was all these different ideas, you know, as talking to them now, well, we could have done this, but it was just so difficult in a small town, again, in the early 80s, to do something like that. So we moved. My dad didn't pick the greatest place to go, because it was still tended to be a very conservative spot. I think we just went and it was like, oh, maybe this wasn't the place to go. But we ended up in Phoenix. So in the 80s, you know, it's really cool now, but back then it was a lot more conservative. Mm-hmm. So we all lived together in the same house. So I was 14. It was very challenging from the outs in the outside world, because we were always, we didn't tell the world our circumstance. Like, we pretended to be a straight family. And my dad's partner, yes. And my dad's partner was the roommate. And we did that from 5 to 14 because they were truly in fear of their lives.
Oh, wow. Like Three's Company with kids.
Yes, yes, yes. And it was like that piece was like so challenging because we weren't allowed to talk about our family. But during that time, we had a lot of positive, like dad had, you know, they had a lot of friends and like I met a lot of, I've been around more gay men than I can even tell you, you know, right. Like just growing up and having that experience, but just, you know, being connected to different people in the world and building relationships and understanding what it meant to build family, like chosen family and, you know, just all of that. And then when I was 14, and I think this is the important part for the listeners, keep in mind the years we're talking here. So in the mid 90s, we moved to a more liberal place and then we were allowed to come out.
Ah.
So at 14, my mom moved into a different household and dad and his partner were in another household and me and my sister would kind of bounce around, but there was no issues. Like, I think that's an important thing. Like, we celebrated all our holidays together. Like, we were still like connected, like still a family. At 14, we were allowed to tell our friends and our family and we lived an out life and it was fine.
There's so much. I know.
Throw questions at me. I'm happy to answer anything.
Was the family closeted to like your greater family? Like
no.
Your immediate family knew.
And the extended family knew too. My mom's, my dad's, and my dad's partner, all of them knew.
And were they all okay with it or was it rocky?
It's hard to say because I had a perfectly fine relationship with them. They never said or did anything negative about that.
Right.
Towards me. But I mean, I think, you know, relationships shift and I think there were some challenges, but different time period, you know, truly.
Yeah. Yeah, no, totally. I mean, I grew up in the same time, so I know exactly what you're talking about.
And yeah, yeah.
And I didn't have gay parents, but I remember how people talked about gay people and it wasn't pretty.
No, it was not.
I'm wondering about your mom's experience of first finding out her husband is gay and sticking with him and then her ex-husband getting a boyfriend and then the whole moving in situation. And what was her, like, how did she make it through that? And did she find kind of a life of her own? Like, how did the relationship work, if I'm being clear?
Yeah, you are. And I do have a lot of those answers, so.
Oh, good.
We talk openly. Yeah. You know, we all talk openly.
Yeah, that's the therapist in you.
Yeah, right. Like, mom, tell me how you were feeling. Yeah. So I know that it was hard, you know, receiving that information, of course, I mean, expected. And I don't really think she knew what to do with that at first. You know, like, do I stay? Do I leave? Do I take the, I think she was trying to figure all of those things out. But I think at the end of the day, she made a decision to be a parent to me and my sister. And I really feel, whether it was right or wrong, I really feel like she put her whole self on the back burner.
Wow.
Yeah. You know, and she had friends, but not romantic relationships. And we really did operate very much. It looked like, I would say, a polyamorous household. Really, if I were to describe it, it really did look that way. Yeah.
You know, you're all just like together.
Yes. We were all together. We did everything together. We went out to eat. We did, you know, we did all, our lives were together.
Wow. It's beautiful. It's beautiful. If it could work out that way in so many instances of parents breaking up and, you know.
It was really, you know, like people will say, oh, that's so strange or whoa, that was, but to me, it was like, no, it wasn't. Like, it was just my household. You know, like, I'm like, I don't even understand what you're talking about.
Because they normalized like, totally, it.
Yeah. And it did feel normal. I just had three parents. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, nothing felt strange about having three parents.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's sad that your mom kind of put herself on the back burner a little bit. That's not the right words.
But
you said it way better.
I agree. I did. But, you know, I understand. But the nice part of that story is that she remarried and she's very happy and she's living a great life and we have a close relationship. And I think that's fabulous. Right.
Yeah.
So she did do that. But then she found her own individual path, too, which I'm really happy for.
I love that. I mean, I do feel like having kids, having young kids, in many ways, I'm married to my kids. Like, you know, I'm still very much in love with my wife and, you know, all the things.
Sure,
but we are both very married to the kids. Like, and
totally.
I talk to some parents who say, no, you have to put yourself and your relationship first. And I get that. I get it. And at the same time, I think that there is a balance that has to be made. And the kids are in many instances at the forefront of every decision I make, of course.
I think it just unfolded how it was meant to unfold. I just think of human beings trying to figure out how to move through a messy situation without any playbook. So even the mistakes that maybe were made, and there are plenty, of course, I don't have any bad feeling about it because it's something that I've been able to talk. I talked to my parents, all three of them, about things. And they can own where they wish they'd done better, or this worked out, or that didn't. This is why I made that decision. Like, we were able to have those conversations in my 20s. I mean, I feel great about that, that I could say, like, when this happened, this is what I was thinking. This is what I was feeling in my 8-year-old brain, you know?
Yeah.
And then it's like, well, let me tell you why this happened. And this was hard for us too, for this reason. And I'm sorry that you went through this. So I feel like that level of conversation, age appropriate conversation, right, helps just create a bigger bond.
This is what we talk about all the time on the show. Because our families are outside the box, we don't fit the mold. These conversations are necessary.
Yes.
It is so necessary to have an open dialogue as families to kind of talk through the outside of the boxness and to be together on who we are as a unit.
Yes.
Because it's a group effort. And so with that comes a lot of openness and willingness to share, I suppose.
Yeah.
And that's why, like, so many queer spawn I speak to say that it gave them, growing up in the family they grew up in, it gave them so much more compassion and it gave them an understanding of what it's like to be othered, and an understanding that it's great to embrace the uniqueness and the differences in everyone. You know, in my head, that just tells me we are better. Ah, duh. We are the better family.
We have to do a lot more work, right? I mean, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it does go down the generations because, like, you know, I am a queer person. I don't have children, but my sister is married to a man, and she has 4 children.
Wow.
And these lessons are passed along to them.
Yeah.
Mm. And so I see her kids, like, they would not in any moment they would never have a negative thing to say. And they're also free to explore gender and sexuality in a way that, you know, in a place that's safe. I mean, there's nothing like having a 6-year-old little girl come up to you and say, their pronouns are this. And you're like, what?
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, oh my gosh. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, it was, but it's like so soon. Like, you know, like, and
it's the best.
But it's like so cute. It was so cute. You know, my niece did that to me, actually. And I was
it's sweetest.
I know, honey. I know, you know, but it's like a place of like loving and valuing someone else's identity and supporting that identity. So it goes on and on.
I love
you know?
That. It's generational and it passes through. So it will pass for my children, regardless of their sexual identity or gender identity. It will pass through to their children should they have them. I love that. And I just want to share a story. My son, he's very much boy. I'm a boy. I'm a boy. You know, like, he's very strong in it.
Yeah.
And then, like, he'll say, like, Mom, who am I going to marry? I don't know, you know, whoever you want. He's like, well, I'm between two people. I'm like, well, who? He's like, well, Maddie, because she's the only girl I like, and Daniel, because he's my bestie forever. You know what I mean? So it's like, it's like really, it's sweet. And it's like, it gives me, because when he's like, I'm a boy. I'm like, oh God, I'm failing this kid. Like, no. Let's just be open and you can wear pink or whatever. But then he says stuff like that. And I'm like, okay. It's getting through to him. All of this, you know, love for all, and you can love whoever you want to love. That's really sweet to hear. I love that.
Oh yeah. And you know, it's, I think about how, you know, in therapy and especially, you know, we talk about, we're passing on generational traumas. Oh my gosh, what are we doing wrong?
Yeah.
But it's like, what about what we're doing right?
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like, so it's like, if you can pass generational trauma, you can pass generational love and support and openness.
I love that. That's good. That's a good takeaway. I appreciate that statement and I appreciate that thought. We'll be right back.
Queer Family Podcast, love is love.
Y'all, if you're listening to this show, there is a decent chance you could use a little help in the sperm department. And California Cryobank, aka Cali Cryo, is a great place to start. They've supported this here podcast for years because they actually do support our families. And I have a wonderful code for you. It's QueerFam25. Use code QueerFam25 and it's going to get you a free level 2 subscription to their donor catalog. And here's 3 quick reasons why Cali Cryo is an awesome place to start your family building journey. They have top tier screening and genetics. They have extensive medical histories, genetic testing, and much more. They have donor options that fit you with a wide, diverse catalog with adult photos, childhood photos, audio interviews, essays, all kinds of things like that. And they have family-minded policies like family slot limits, file storage, and a very responsive support team that works well with LGBTQIA plus paths. If you know, you know, and they know. Go to cryobank.com, use code QueerFam25, that's QUEERFAM25. And they're going to give you a free level 2 subscription to their donor catalog. You can also use that promo code for a discount on a level 3 subscription, which gives you even more info. So go ahead, go to the website, start building those families, and then come tell me about them. All right, back to the show.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Love is love.
And what I also want to hone in on here, you mentioned that your sister is straight.
Yes.
And you identify as queer.
Yes.
And so, you know, exposing your children to queerness at a young age is not necessarily going to make them queer or confused people. And I'm speaking to the choir here, to the listeners. They all know that. But like, you know, we're doing this interview like right on the heels of all the news about Snoop saying that he had issue with the two mom family and Buzz Lightyear movie.
I know.
And how am I going to explain that to my grandkids? Like, this is on the, this is 2025, y'all. Like, come on, Snoop. And Snoop was on the L word. Get out of here.
Yeah. It's really just, I can't. I know. It's ridiculous.
Right? So like, I can't believe I have to point this out still to this day. Like, no. We're not going to just create queer people. That's not how this works. If that created queer people, then I would be straight because all I saw was straight my whole life.
Exactly. And that's like we have to just kind of use logic in this, right? There would be no queer people.
I know. Like, what the hell?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, it's infuriating.
And what we have to go through to even understand what's happening to us, you know, especially generations ago, like, what's going on? Why do I feel different? What? It's like that. Come on. You cannot make someone a sexual orientation or a gender identity. It's not possible. Otherwise, those conversion camps would have worked. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, you can't do that.
Truth. Mike, I just did a mic drop.
Yeah, beautiful. Yeah.
Come on. Oh, it's so infuriating. There's so many misnomers and fear-mongering, so much fear-mongering out there. It's disgusting. But, you know, preaching to the choir here.
Yeah,
with this,
I know,
this
I
audience.
Know.
They
yeah,
know.
Yeah,
they know. Yeah. So I want to talk a little bit about what you do, because I think, obviously, what you do and your life's work kind of comes on the heels of how you grew up, if I'm assuming correctly. So let's go into it a little bit.
Growing up, unfortunately, one of the largest bodies that I felt was against my family was Christianity. I mean, I saw it back in the days of Donahue and Geraldo, it was like the moral majority is standing on the stage and they're just hating on gay people. And so I would see that when I was little. And I knew
Sally Jesse Raphael.
Yes, yes, with her red glasses, right? Like, you know, and like you're just like, oh my gosh, like, why do these people hate me? Why do they hate my family? I don't understand this.
Right.
And in the community we lived, it was a very high Mormon population.
Oh.
So it was just this continuous, like, no, those are nope. You know, so I was a lot of fear around religion and I didn't understand at all what was going on there.
Were you raised with religion?
Catholic by birth, but I didn't really have a religious upbringing.
Yeah, I didn't have any religion growing up.
Yeah, yeah, I did. So it really was very confusing to me because I didn't have all that messaging growing up.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
but you saw it on TV. You saw it everywhere.
Yeah. And it was like, this is so painful and mean. Like, where are you getting this from? These things aren't even true. You know, it was just awful. So when I was a little bit older, I'd say when I was in high school and a little bit after, I got really interested in religion. And I actually joined a fundamentalist church.
Whoa.
That's a whole other episode, Jamie. Yeah. So I joined a fundamentalist church because I was so enamored with a particular person that went to that church. But I was also very curious about the dislike, right? What's going on here? So I spent several years, I was out. That was an important piece of this. I never pretended that I was someone I wasn't or that I was going to be anything different than what I was. And I would get into these like debates with the church. And I even went to it was like a day camp type thing where there were speakers, ex-gay speaker. I mean, I just like jumped in there and it wasn't because I at any moment thought I was going to be ex-gay because I knew that wasn't a thing. But I was curious, how did they get there? What's their story? What's going on, right?
As someone who was not raised with religion, I have always been so curious about religion. But I want to be like a fly on the wall to like try to like understand. It's kind of like a fly. Yeah, like I will go into these spaces to try to get what it is you're getting from this because it doesn't do it for me. Nothing. None of it does. Ever.
I hear you. Right. Because it was, I could not get it. I couldn't get it. But being in those spaces, I could understand how other people were in this space, especially like if you've had it since birth.
Right.
You know, mm-hmm. the more controlling religious environment, it's very hard to move away from, right?
Yeah.
So I just was in it. And then, of course, with, you know, this woman in the church, I was like, why is this wrong? Like, what's this problem here? I didn't get it. So I studied religion. I got a BA in religious studies. I got a master's in theology. And then my goal was to work with queer individuals who were Christian. Mm-hmm. And we're trying to navigate the intersection of, which I view as kind of two different identities that the world kind of says you can't be.
Right.
Those two things together, right? So that was my initial work. But then as I went on, I saw that there was religious trauma happening to all people.
Mm.
Any sexual identity, gender, it didn't matter. Like, you know, people of color, like any group really.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. then I started working with people that had religious trauma. And so the book I have coming out teaches therapists how to work with people with religious trauma because that's not something that is really understood fully and talked about, but it all really came back to that young experience of being my family being rejected, clearly rejected by this group, then my experience of religious trauma in sense with this girl, even though I wasn't part of that faith, right? And then going on to like, how do I stop this from happening to other people?
Yeah.
Or help support other people.
That's awesome. But whatever happened with the girl? Was she like super in the church and couldn't go with it?
Super in the church. Yeah. Our lives totally.
But were you were you like a couple at one point? Like, was she going for it?
No. Oh. Like, well,
those are the worst.
It was a tragedy. She was all these amazingly wonderful, bright, beautiful things. And I think religious trauma, I mean, there was a lot of religious trauma just swallowed her up. So it's like, even though we did remain in touch, friends, but our lives went completely, completely different. So I do this for her too.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, yeah, totally. So we have some stuff happening in the world right now that I wanted to get your take on, with the whole, like, you know, there was just a mass shooting that happened. So when this airs, it will have been a couple weeks. So apologies for bringing it up again to listeners or watchers, but I'm grappling with it today. It just happened yesterday, the day we're recording it, the shooting in the Catholic Church. And I would just love to get kind of your take on it as a trauma-informed therapist. I mean, this happened in a church as well.
Yeah. Which is,
and it sounds like it was a transgender human who did it, which is a real blow to our community. I'm just wondering if you have any, and I'm throwing this at you. I didn't
know.
Yeah,
no, that's fine. No, it's fine. It's fine. It's fine.
I'm wondering if you have any insight or guidance or just thoughts. This is horrendous. And I know that parents and humans everywhere are really heartbroken over this terrible, terrible tragedy.
I guess the first thing I want to say is that, you know, the ripple effect of these situations is just atrocious. And sometimes I don't even think we think about what that impact is. So I was a first responder in the Las Vegas shooting back a while ago. So I can tell you from experience that those things change you. So we're talking, you know, from the survivors to the first responders to the extended family. Like, it's just the ripple effect is so, so vast. And I think it's important for us as a community to acknowledge that these things, they really don't happen in a vacuum. You'll have people for the rest of their lives that are impacted deeply by this experience. I'm so frustrated, Jamie. I think that's at the end of the day with this, like, you know, like a transgender person does this. And I want to know how many times we demonize white men when we know that white men are the people that, you know what I mean? Like that.
Yes.
So it's like yeah. We can't do that. Like we,
no.
it's, it doesn't
but
make sense.
That's what they're doing. They're demonizing the whole community because this one person did this. I don't condone what this person did. No,
no,
this was a
absolutely
monstrous,
not.
Monstrous thing. But yes. My wife and I were talking about this last night. It seems like if you are a minoritized group, if you are an othered group, you have to be so much more vigilant in remaining an upright, good citizen because
yes.
your whole community suffers at any one person's wrongdoing, which doesn't happen when you are the group in power. When you are the group in power, it's just, oh, that's humanity. That's what happens.
Yep.
And so I am so utterly horrified at what happened and then so utterly angered and frustrated at what is going to come from this. And I see it. I know exactly where it's going to go, obviously. And we're going to have to hear about, right? I'm bracing myself to grapple with, A, what this human did and the devastation it has caused to, like you just said, a ripple effect of so many. And then what certain people, a huge amount of people, are going to try to do to a minority because of the identity of the person who did it.
Yeah.
It's heartbreaking. It's awful.
It is heartbreaking. It is. It's, yeah, I think that's such a valid point. And, you know, that's a trauma point too, what you said, what you and your wife were talking about. is when you're part of a marginalized group that you have to like show up extra nice and extra perfect. That is a trauma response.
Right. I've talked to a lot of queer spawn who say the same kind of thing. Like, I felt like I had to be an upstanding, perfect child because I was representing my gay family. And I don't know, you know, I don't know if you can speak to that, but.
Agree. I mean, that's, you know, we're trying to survive and we don't know who the people are that are just going to hate us because we exist. Right. So we're trying to show the best parts of ourselves. While we are a community, we are still individuals. So if an individual makes a choice that is not a representation of an entire community, but again, like you said, when you're part of a marginalized group or a minority group or an oppressed group, one person seems to speak for us all. And that is, I feel like I'm going to sound like a Spock, but like illogical, like totally illogical.
Right. And that's the state of the world we're in.
I was doing some reading last night because I'm like, what is up with the US? Like, what? I'm so like, this is out of control, right? Oof. And there are so many other countries that do allow guns. This is a uniquely US problem. And one of the things that I was reading, that there are 120 firearms to every 100 citizens in the US.
Oh my God.
We have more firearms per individual than any other country in the world by almost double.
Ugh.
And the way that we view guns in this country being about protection and the, you know, the Second Amendment, the way that that's framed changes our cultural view on guns. While many other countries that allow guns don't have the same cultural view. They view it as like sport or hunting.
Right.
We think of it as protection. And also the way that the community interacts with our police is also another issue around guns.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, that politicians refuse to make a move. You know, I mean, you have places like New Zealand that had one mass shooting and they immediately made a move.
Right. Yeah.
And you know, so we have a big, big cultural problem around guns. And it's not about taking away gun rights. It's about how we understand guns. When you really are studying and looking at other countries, you see kind of where we're failing, where these other countries that allow guns are not failing.
Interesting.
Yeah. So I'm upset. To say the least, I'm upset. Yeah.
Me too. We all are. And, you know, and I don't allow my kids gunplay at all. Like, there's no toy guns.
I don't
and
blame you.
Other parents think we're ridiculous and we're too much and we're too strict. And I don't know. It might make them gun-loving adults when they grow up because we denied them that fun as kids. Who knows? But I don't like them. And I don't want my kids playing bang bang in my house.
It is not even a silly, like, when you think about that statement, is so culturally like having fun with guns. Like, the fact that you even can think about fun with guns is just wild in itself, right?
Right. Like,
but it's steeped in our culture, that perspective.
Yeah, it's so American.
Yeah, I really hope for something different.
Some change. Well, with that being said, and, you know, you being a trauma-informed therapist and all, do you have any advice for how we all can, I don't know, like, part of me wants to help, but I don't know how to help, you know, all the things.
I think that you staying informed is very important, you know, and but in understanding the bigger picture and like what you do with your kids. I mean, we're forming the next generation, right? So hopefully we move a little bit closer towards love and peace, I guess. Like, I mean, it feels like a turtle's race and then we take 50 steps back. But I mean, I still have hope, you know?
Yeah.
It isn't there. And I try to look at, are there places where things are showing up? Because it is so, so upsetting. But I think that if you are someone who feels like you're experiencing pain or trauma, or like, it's a good idea to have support around that. And if you feel like you're someone who can give support, you know, find a way to do that. Like, you know, you say like, I don't know what to do, but you're doing it in this moment.
Right. I just used the person I'm interviewing.
No, but you're doing it. No, but you're, but just even like acknowledging what's happening and, you know, giving voice to that gives other people voice. And, you know, so I think like we use the avenues that we have. We just cannot be quiet. I think that's the thing. We just can't be quiet.
That is also a recurring theme that comes up on this show and just in my life in general. Can't be quiet. We have to speak up. We have to speak up. Yep. We have to be upstanders. We have to.
Yes,
cannot
we
be
do.
Bystanders, especially right now. We cannot be bystanders. So
no.
Ugh. So talk to people and speak up. Yeah, talk to people and speak up and hug your loved ones.
Yes, and have your community. You know what I mean? I think that there's a lot of burnout that's going on with people right now too, because we are trying to stand up. We're trying to talk. We're trying to do this. We're have people that you can go to and also laugh with. I have a friend who is really steeped in a lot of this work, especially around DEI and all the things that are happening there. And she says, you know what? I have to have my queer joy because that's a form of resistance too.
Truth. I love that.
Yeah.
I love that. Yeah. Find that queer joy. Queer joy is a term that has really like taken off in my life lately. Yeah. I don't know if it's just more, we're saying it more and more, but like it is, that is like everything to me. Queer joy, find it. Bring the queer joy to every situation you can, because we bring, this whole episode is a testament to this. We bring our unique perspectives that those who are not us do not bring to the table. Yeah. So we got to continue spreading that queer joy, because not everybody has that in them.
Exactly. And no, exactly. And you know, and it's just even us talking like this, even just outside of, you know, resistance, but I think it's people hearing that others experience what they are experiencing. If they have doubts or fear or shame, they can hear these stories and they can say, there's a way through. Our stories are so important. And our stories are so important for those who've never even met queer people because they have these ideas of what it means to be queer. So I think it's just, we just keep speaking our truth and showing up.
100%. I love it. I love it so much. All right. So wait, when does your book come out? Is it close to coming out? Or
it'll be in 2026. I'm going through the drafts now, but people can go to my website and they can join the book mailing list.
Okay, perfect. And how can people get a hold of you if they want to chat with you?
They can go to annrusso.org. And I do love people wanting to chat. I'm like totally here for it.
All right. Love that. Love that. So if you want to hear more from Anne, reach out to Anne directly. And it's awesome. And I really appreciate having talked to you. That was awesome. Was there anything else you wanted to share?
I feel like we did a good job.
Yeah. Good job. Good job, Anne. Give yourself a pat on the back.
Yeah.
And also, sorry to spring that on you. It just came to me when you're talking about trauma.
No.
And I was like, oh my God, I need to ask Anne.
I don't mind it being sprung on me. I'm happy to share and talk, because I feel like it's important for all of us.
Yeah. I think that was a little healing for me. So I hope some others got a little bit of something. I'm not saying I'm healed, but I don't think I'll ever be healed, but
right? We're healing.
Yeah. Healing vibes.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you, Anne. This has been really wonderful.
Thank you
so much,
Jamie.
Go out and spread some more queer joy.
Yes, you too.
Queer Family Podcast.
A special thank you once again to California Cryobank for being a sponsor of this episode. Use code QUEERFAM25 for a free level 2 subscription to their donor catalog. And tune in next week for another amazing episode of Queer Family Goodness.
Love is love.
Whew. Well, folks, I hope you enjoyed that episode as much as I enjoyed it. And if you did enjoy it, feel free to listen to another or watch another. I have so many episodes for your listening or viewing pleasure. Just go pick one and enjoy. There's a lot. There really is. And also, if you really do like this show, please, I know I say it all the time, but please do consider supporting the show on Patreon. You're just going to go to patreon.com/thequeerfamilypodcast. You're going to pick a tier, you're going to join, and you're going to get that bonus content. And you're also going to get my love and adoration for the rest of my life. I love you all. Thanks for tuning in. Keep on tuning in, and I'll see you next time. Mwah.
Are you the one keeping everything together in your family, but maybe you're secretly or not so secretly falling apart?
Dude, you are not alone. We have been there too.
I'm Joanne.
And I'm Bree, and we're the hosts of the No Guilt Mom podcast.
If your to-do list never ends, your kids depend on you for everything, and you're constantly putting your own needs last.
Or if you're the go-to parent, but you're starting to feel burnt out and resentful, we're here to help.
Each week, we give you practical strategies from parenting and psychology experts and from our own real mom experience to help you take back time, energy, and joy.
So you can stop feeling like you're the family martyr and start leading as a confident, guilt-free role model.
Subscribe to the No Guilt Mom podcast and let's help you ditch the overwhelm and actually enjoy your family again.
Listen now wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Are you moving through adolescence with your kiddo, navigating the fear and worry that comes with this season of parenting? The Joyful Courage podcast for parents of teens is what you've been searching for. Real conversations about real challenges. Lying, screens, school, risky behavior, I cover it all. My name is Casey O'Rourke. I'm a positive discipline lead trainer and parent coach. I put shows out each week that reframe the messy terrain of the teen years and leave listeners feeling seen and hopeful. Check out Joyful Courage wherever you listen to podcasts.